Your dad was John McCain.
Yes. My dad was a huge music fan. I'm going to tell you right now, my dad loved Willie Nelson. And people are like, you can't say you liked Willie Nelson because he dodged his taxes, blah, blah, blah. Well, he loved Willie Nelson. He did.
Everybody thinks they can do it. How can I become a professional wrestler? You really can't.
I pulled out the gun and I shot two times.
We have a complicated family. We were all raised to argue with each other with intensity, with passion, but also to love each other.
This is WTMJ Conversations.
Welcome to WTMJ Conversations. I'm your host, Libby Collins. Lisa Praber is a Milwaukee entrepreneur. She does sales training through her company, Middlesex. She also does things like boot camps and something called Pitch Slapped. But she's also been involved in a lot of local organizations, including the Milwaukee Neighbors Association, the Metropolitan Milwaukee Association of Commerce, and she's recently opened a downtown bar called Your Office. But you know what's most interesting? She's written a unique book for children called Mama Cow, which illustrates an approach to starting a family that she has personally experienced. And Lisa, first of all, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Now, I don't want to talk to you so much about your businesses because I know that takes up a lot of your time. But I want to talk to you about your personal life. And I hope you're open to that.
I am perfectly open to that.
Now, you are, I guess, what we used to call a career woman.
Absolutely.
Yet at the same time, there are things that a lot of women want to do, including having a family. And you've got a very different approach to that. At least, I don't want to say it's unconventional, but it's just not the road that a lot of people take. So let's start, first of all, by talking a little bit about you and how you built your career.
Sure. I'll go all the way back 20-some years ago. Born and raised here in Milwaukee. Went to UW-Milwaukee for fine arts. Met a guy. Moved to Arizona sight unseen. Got married with the intention of being a mother and staying at home with my babies. And that man lost his job and I had to get a job. So I fell into sales by accident. And that's a whole nother part of my career journey. But the relationship didn't work. And then I had another one and another one and another one. And you know how the story goes. And I was just never good at dating. But the one thing I always knew I wanted to do was start a family. So I moved back to Wisconsin, had a guy follow me. That didn't work out. So I went to the doctor and I said, tell me about having a baby by myself. And she just made it super casual. She was like, oh, fun. Let's look at sperm donors.
Wait. Okay. We're going to back up here a second.
Yes.
So like you said, and again, you know, it's tough finding the right guy, especially if you want them to be the father of your child. So obviously you took a look at a lot of different men.
I did my due diligence.
Yeah. And I'm sure that you looked at them not just as a partner, but what kind of dad would they be? And what was it about it that you said, none of these guys will quite make the cut?
You know, I'm not saying that none of them would have been a good father. It was more, I was trying to check a box. And at the end of the day, I didn't want to get married or do this parenthood thing the traditional way just because that's the way it traditionally goes. I wasn't finding anybody that I could see myself spending the rest of my life with and having a partner that makes me happy. And I really believe you have to take care of number one, first and foremost. And I just didn't want to sacrifice my happiness just to check that box.
All right, so let's go back to the doctor. You walk in, you say, hey, I'm thinking about becoming a single mom. And she said, oh, good. Let's look at sperm donors. How does that process work? How do you look at potential fathers for a child?
Well, that was a journey in itself. That doctor pulled up an Excel spreadsheet, which was the Midwest Sperm Bank, and you'd have a Excel spreadsheet full of guys, and they'd have a comment at the end, and one of the guys said, I look like Aaron Rodgers, and the doctor and I were laughing like, okay, I'm sure you do. So part of my journey was, first of all, I said, I'll give myself a year.
Did these profiles have photos?
Not the Midwest Sperm Bank.
Okay, so you just had things like, I look like Aaron Rodgers.
Yes.
I'm an accountant. I went to school at such and such a place.
Yeah, and I didn't love that. So I decided to give myself a year to really make sure this was the journey I wanted to go on. And I started evaluating sperm banks. And there's dozens of sperm banks. And then within each sperm bank, there's thousands of donors. So my first step was to pick a sperm bank that I felt comfortable with. So I ended up using the Seattle Sperm Bank.
Why did you select that one?
So they did a lot of really good due diligence themselves. They had baby pictures of the donors. They had really great health screenings. They did genetic testing. They had audio interviews. I think you can tell a lot about somebody by how they speak. And so I just felt really comfortable with how they approached the donor selection and kind of, you know, if you've ever done online dating or the apps, it's kind of the same thing, to be honest with you. You're looking at thousands of people and it's almost impossible to know before meeting them if it's going to be a good decision. So for me, over that year, I talked about this a lot and tried to find people that have had to select sperm and make a donor selection. And there's no resources out there. You just have to pick. So I ended up having a doctor from my personal doctor who was also looking for a donor at the time. And she said what she did was all they wanted was a healthy baby. So she said to make sure that the donor had already had a live pregnancy, make sure their blood type worked well with mine to lower my chances of miscarriage, and that they had no genetic preconditions, so then I didn't have to pay for genetic testing for myself. So I emailed the Seattle Sperm Bank and I said, this is what I want, and it narrowed thousands down to eight.
Eight people
that met that criteria. So then I emailed back and said, all right, give me the ones that are 6 foot or taller, smart and athletic. And that narrowed it down to three. And then one of those was out of stock.
Wait. He was out of stock.
I think you heard me right.
All right, we'll let that one go. Coming up on WTMJ Conversations.
They did a beautiful job curating an entire menu that was ball-based. We had live minnow races. Yep, pin the sperm on the ovary.
Lisa Praber throws herself a sperm party.
Now, more of WTMJ Conversations.
Welcome back. I'm Libby Collins. We're talking with entrepreneur and author of Mama Cow, Lisa Praber. Okay, so now you're down to...
I'm down to two.
Two guys. So tell us about the two guys.
One was Raj. He was from a long line of doctors. The other was Eric, who liked barbecue and animals. And in Eric's baby pictures, one of his baby pictures, he was wearing a Packer shirt. So
was he from Wisconsin?
Well, it was Seattle Sperm Bank. So I don't know, but I'm a diehard Packer fan. So I figured that at least would put some Packer fan blood into the sperm. So it would increase their chances of being a Packer fan because that's important to me for my children.
All right. So now you've got it down to two guys. But you had a third one that you had considered had he been in stock.
Maybe he would have made a donation. So what I did was I threw a raging sperm party for 100 of my closest friends.
All right, hold on. You threw what kind of a party?
A sperm party.
What exactly, Lisa, is a sperm party?
Well, a sperm party is a celebration of choosing a sperm donor. And we had the perfect location, Balzac. Rest in peace, Balzac. But they did a beautiful job curating an entire menu that was ball-based. So we had the sack and cheese, meatballs. The signature drink was the fizz. The signature shot was the shots. We had amazing games.
Do realize I'm blushing.
It should feel natural. This is natural, right? We had live minnow races.
What do you mean you had minnow races?
Live minnow races. So I built alleys for minnows to race with gutters from Home Depot. And then we put eggs at the end of the gutters. And then you'd pick your...
Like chicken eggs?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And then you'd pick your winning minnow and you'd go up against a few friends and see which one got to the egg first. Yep. We had turkey baster relay. So you start with a turkey baster and you have to get from one cup to the next, and whoever has the most left in their baster at the end wins. We had sperm toss where I had two friends paint vaginas on bag boards. And then a friend sewed sperm for the bags, and you would toss the sperm into the hole. I still have them if anybody wants to borrow them. Pin the sperm on the ovary. And then we had cutouts of all these guys, and they were wearing thongs, and you'd put a dollar in the thong of your favorite, so you were voting as
so
well.
So these are pictures of the three guys that you would consider.
Silhouettes of the men.
Okay.
My mom.
Who won, by the way?
Eric.
Eric won.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Packers shirts, we're in Wisconsin.
How many people voted and who won in the voting?
You know, I have to be honest, I don't even remember. It was just a celebration. People were having a blast. My mom even made cookies for everybody that were sperm that said, thank you for coming. So that was the parting gift for everybody. It was a celebration.
So your family was okay with all this?
I wouldn't go that far. I would say that I come from a very traditional, very conservative family, and they did not immediately jump on board with this. It was a struggle. I'd say my family was split in half in their opinions on this.
You had the party and you announced at the end of the party?
Who I picked.
Who was?
Eric. The Packer fan,
Packer
baby.
Fan.
Yes.
And to, I imagine, a rousing round of applause.
Oh, yes. Yes. Everyone was thrilled.
All right. So now you've gotten to the point you've announced. Are you pregnant at this point?
So actually that morning, my cycle aligned where that was my first try. So I didn't know if
I was... The day of the party.
Correct. Yes. So the first round didn't work. So I immediately went into the second round and the second round worked.
All right. For people who are not familiar with... There's different kinds of artificial insemination, correct?
There is.
What form did you choose?
Yeah, so I did what they call IUI, which is basically a turkey baster and some sperm. Sperm arrives in a cryo tank and...
Does it come to your home?
It could if I wanted to do it at home, but I chose to just have the doctor do it. And it arrived at the doctor's office, and I came in during my cycle, and a half an hour before I got there, the nurses take the little vial of sperm out of the cryo tank, and they hold it in their hand and walk around the office and trade off with it to bring it to room temperature. And it's crazy to think about, but that's how you warm up sperm and get it ready for insemination.
So how long does the actual process take?
Well, you know, it's about the same time as regular sex. Just kidding. They just toss the sperm in there and you put your butt up in the air for 10 minutes and then you go home. And
can I ask you emotionally how you felt that day?
Well, the first time I was very nervous, and I was in this room, you know, at the doctor's office, no windows. And I don't know if I really grasped what I was doing at that time. But then it didn't work. And I was way more devastated than I thought I would be. But for other people trying to have a baby, I imagine it's the same thing. Every time you get your period, you're devastated that you didn't get pregnant. So I had some big emotions when it didn't work the first time. But I had lunch with a girlfriend who really did a great job of psyching me back up. And I immediately jumped into the second round. And that second round, I brought with my nieces and my sister-in-law and was in a room with windows. And
you had a lot of support with you.
Yes. And I think the vibes were right that time, and the second time worked.
Coming up on WTMJ Conversations.
Clayton was born on March 13th of 2020, the start of the pandemic. So there was some differences in what I expected versus reality.
Lisa Praber talks about spending the first couple of months with her baby in total isolation.
You're listening to WTMJ Conversations.
Welcome back. I'm Libby Collins. We're talking with entrepreneur and author of Mama Cow, Lisa Praber. How far along were you when it was confirmed you were pregnant?
Well, I peed on a stick, 10 days afterwards, and it was positive.
So you were sure of that? What was the pregnancy like for you?
Amazing. I loved being pregnant. I thrived. I've never felt healthier. I've never felt stronger, more energy, clearer in my mind. I love being pregnant.
Was there any judgment in terms of you being a single pregnant woman?
I don't think I got judgment besides from my family. Some of my family did have a really hard time with it. But I think for the most part, the people I surround myself with were very supportive. But I do think that for Wisconsin, it is a little bit more progressive than a lot of our population is. And I've always been, we can call it a black sheep, but I would say an early adapter, a bandwagon girl. So I'm usually ahead of anything and willing to jump on things that are a little bit different.
Did you know the gender of the baby?
No, just sperm tossed up in there. So the other option for this kind of journey would be IVF, where you take sperm, put it in an egg and then fertilize the egg. And I believe you can choose gender with that type of insemination. But for me, it was just trying the old fashioned way.
So,
or new fashioned way, I guess we should say it.
You went into labor.
Yes.
Was it an easy labor for you?
Yes, magical. So as a single mom, I lived alone downtown in a big apartment complex. And so went into labor at 3 o'clock in the morning, and I called my neighbor and I said, hey, can you take me to the hospital? And he said, oh my God, and drives me to the hospital, 3 o'clock in the morning. And I hadn't found out what I was having at that time. And when my brothers got married to their wives, I threatened both of their lives and said, you cannot take the name Clayton. That's my mom's dad's name. I said, that's my baby name. And they're like, what if you never get pregnant? What if you never have a boy? And I'm like, I don't care. That's my name. You can't have it. Anyways, I go into labor. I call my mom. I say, hey, mom, I'm going into labor. And she was like, oh my God, it's my dad's birthday today. And so she gets to the hospital. The doctor that walks in is like, there's no way you're having this baby today. You're only 2 centimeters and it's your first labor, so it's going to take forever. Of course, the baby came that day, and my mom got to call it when the baby came out, and it was Clayton, and he was born on my grandpa's birthday. So that was a major moment for my family, who's very, Christian, and they saw that as a nod from God to be, welcoming to Clayton into the world.
Did you find it challenging once you had the baby and got over the excitement and everything and had to go back to regular working life and supporting not just yourself now? You've got a child to support. Did you find it challenging at all?
Well, Libby, Clayton was born on March 13th of 2020, the start of the pandemic. So there was some differences in what I expected versus reality. I knew I was having a baby alone, but I did not know how alone I would be. I had tons of friends scheduled to come into town from Arizona because I lived there for so long, and they all had to cancel their flight. So I really spent my maternity leave alone downtown, trapped in a brick castle, which was lovely. I really got to spend time with my baby, but I had sold commercial furniture at the time. And 9 months into my baby's life, I lost my job because no one was buying commercial furniture, which was a blessing in disguise. I had a 9-month-old baby at home. That company took care of me, on my way out. And I had this amazing opportunity to search for a dream job out loud. So, I ended up at a new company. And the second Clayton turned 1 year, I tried for another with the same donor.
Wait. Another baby?
Yes.
You only have a 1-year-old and you're saying, I'm going to do this again.
Absolutely.
Same guy.
Same donor. Yep.
Had you met him or talked to him at all?
Not how it works. Nope. You just order a vial of sperm online, arrives via FedEx.
And you pretty much went through the same thing the second time?
Well, the second time, maybe when Clayton was 6 months old, I went on the Seattle Sperm Bank website and started perusing sperm and noticed that Eric was out of stock. So I called and I said, is there a chance that Eric might make a donation for a sibling? And they said, oh, no problem. We keep reserved for siblings. So it was actually easy to curate, another vial for baby number two.
Did you ever wonder why Eric had decided to be a donor?
It's a very interesting question. I guess I never did, but my mom was just very concerned about why a man would donate his sperm.
Yeah.
But the sperm process is very interesting. So while I was very vocal about this journey, I would have people, random strangers saying, can I be the donor? Can I donate my sperm? I'd have friends, husbands saying, ooh, you can have some of my sperm.
Were they serious?
I do think they were serious. I think there's this primal desire to populate for men. And it was so funny to experience. I mean, I'd look at some of these guys, are you serious? Stop it. And I didn't want any ties to anything. I love the donation process because it's, you know, it's cut and dry. I don't have to worry about any baggage or anything like that. But yeah, it was very interesting.
Coming up on WTMJ Conversations.
The moment you see and meet your child is the most primal, magical, undescribable moment ever.
Entrepreneur and author Lisa Praber reveals why she decided to carry another couple's baby.
Now, more of WTMJ Conversations.
And I'm Libby Collins. Our guest today is Lisa Praber, an entrepreneur and the author of Mama Cow. So you have a second child?
Second child.
His name is?
His name is Vince, after Vince Lombardi, obviously, because I'm a psycho Packer fan.
And keeping the Packers.
Yes, got to keep that bloodline alive.
Okay. All right. So now you've got the two boys. And I mean, one kid's a lot. But you have two, and especially two boys. That's really a handful.
You know, I think for the mothers out there that are doing this with a partner, they may understand that it's probably just as hard as it is to be in a relationship, or maybe it's easier. I mean, I make all the decisions. I don't have any animosity or stress or anger or expectations of anyone else. I just handle it. I don't necessarily feel, you know, like I have a disadvantage for parenting. I thrive. And, you know, when Vince turned a year, I had a different kind of mom guilt that I had these babies so easily and by myself. And I watch a lot of moms out there really struggling with fertility. And I felt so guilty that I was able to do this so easy and had such easy pregnancies that when Vince turned a year, I decided I wanted to surrogate for a family as well.
All right. Stop right there. You had these two beautiful boys. You had had just a great positive experience with them. And then rather than having a third child for yourself, you decided you would want to carry a child for another couple?
Yeah, I loved being pregnant. I mean, I would have a million kids if I could afford it and had the additional help, but I really wanted to give back. The moment you see and meet your child is the most primal, magical, undescribable moment ever. And I got to do it twice, and I just desperately wanted to give that to someone who wouldn't have been able to do it themselves.
So how did you go about becoming a surrogate?
Yeah, so another thing that I didn't want to tell my family I was doing because, you know, that was another layer of very unique and unorthodox, you know, things to do for a person. But I ended up reaching out to the number one organically ranked surrogacy agency. And I talked to an attorney there, and she asked me if I had told my network that I was doing this. And I told them that I didn't want my network knowing. I just wanted to do this.
What do you mean by your network?
My friends, my family. And she said that the waiting list for a surrogate is at least 2.5 years and sometimes more for families because the surrogate gets to pick the family. And that it might be a good idea for me to tell my network that I want a surrogate because people are very private about that kind of thing. And if I did this for a stranger and without knowing that one of my close friends wanted a surrogate, I might feel really bad about it. So I loved that advice. And so I did put it out on my Facebook that I was going to be a surrogate. And if anybody was interested to reach out.
What kind of reaction did you get?
Well, I knew what kind of reaction I was going to get. So I wrote the post like a frequently asked questions post. So I said, hello, network, I'm going to be a surrogate. If you know anybody who's interested, put them in contact with me. And then I said, frequently asked questions. What if you die? What if you want to keep the baby? And I answered all those frequently asked questions that I knew everybody was going to freak out about. And I tackled that.
Did you get any negative feedback from anybody, either on your network or family, people that you worked with, saying, why would you have a child for someone else?
I have a little bit of a quirk. I am, some would say, aggressively positive. So actually, I have aggressive positivity trademarked. So just so you know. So I can't tell you if I heard any negative feedback, because negative feedback just rolls right off of me. So I can't even answer that question for you, Libby.
All right. How did you decide who you would carry a child for?
Yeah, so I had three people reach out that were interested, and one of them was an old neighbor, and I didn't have a great feeling about that. And then one of them was an acquaintance who had just started thinking about it, so they were probably far out in their process of actually executing it. And then the third one was a friend of a friend who sat down and told me their story. And, you know, I think part of the journey was they were just waiting for a miracle, because agencies are really expensive. They were waiting, you know, to find somebody that would do it for more love than money. And that's what I was after. I wanted to give back. And so she told me her story. I told her mine. And she said, I think we've just been waiting for a miracle. And I said, I think I'm your miracle. And we did it.
So it was in the same form as what you had done before? Or did they do IVF?
They did IVF. So it was her egg and his sperm.
So this is not your biological child then?
No, not at all. In fact, something interesting is when you surrogate, nothing is your DNA. So the embryo grows the placenta as well. So there is no part of my body in that child at all. No part of my DNA. So it's a very fascinating process.
Did it feel different when you were pregnant and carrying someone else's child as opposed to when you were carrying your own?
No. And one of my deal breakers was they also had to be surprised, because I was with my first two. And I think that helped
surprised me. Surprised as far as the gender?
Yeah. So I think that helped me with my children as well as their child to not maybe feel as anxious. It helped me separate.
How did you explain to your sons that you were carrying someone else's child? This was not going to be a sibling.
Yeah, we called it NOB, not our baby. And the kids were little, 2 and 3 years old. So, you know, they just were like, no, that's not our baby. That's NOB. It was adorable. They had no idea.
Hopefully this was a pretty easy pregnancy as well.
The easiest, yes.
Coming up on WTMJ Conversations.
They look at each other and it is this unreal, surreal moment. I'm going to deliver the baby for my patient.
You're listening to WTMJ Conversations.
And I'm Libby Collins. Our guest today is Lisa Praber. When you went into labor with the parents there?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So the mom was in a chair right next to mine. And actually, you heard the Clayton story and, you know, a little ode to God maybe interfering, but this birth mom and I went to the same OBGYN practice, West Dallas Women's Pavilion, and there's tons and tons of doctors there. And when you deliver your baby, it's whoever's on call. You don't like have your own doctor come in. Well, when I went into labor, the labor and delivery nurse who walked in was the same labor and delivery nurse that I had with Vince. So she walks in and she's like, hey, and I'm like, hey, girl. And I mean, we had become friends during Vince. She even like dated my cousin for a little bit. So that was really fun. And then the doctor who walked in was the birth mom's OBGYN who told her 20 years ago that she wouldn't be able to have a child. So they look at each other and it is this unreal, surreal moment. Like, oh my God, I'm going to deliver the baby for my patient that I thought I would never be here. It was so magical to watch that interaction. So birth mom right next to me in the chair, birth dad right next to her. My mom was in the room. Baby came out in a push and a half and went straight to mom's chest. And it was...
You didn't hold the baby.
Oh, no. That's not my baby. That's not my moment. That was her moment.
How do you separate that? I am asking this sincerely. That you've been carrying this child for 9 months and you just, here's your baby.
Well, I think there's a couple things. I have two of my own babies at home, which were 2 and 3 at the time. So if you have a toddler, you know, they're a lot of work. But this couple came to every single doctor's appointment and they made every shot, every call, everything was, I wanted it to be in 100% their experience.
So there was no twinge of emotion?
No. No, just joy for watching her meet her baby. Yeah, that baby went straight to her chest, and it was just, it was as magical for me as my pregnancies, watching her have that moment.
A boy or a girl?
A boy. And that's a funny story. So baby goes right to mom. Everybody in the room is just staring in awe, and we're all dying of joy. And then we're like, wait, what is it? And so she opens, you know, the blanket that's on the baby and points it towards her husband. And he is the most type A stoic man. And he goes, he looks over and he goes, it's a boy. And we're like, what's his name? And he says the name, and everybody, it was just so joyous. And then I ate a giant burger, slept for 17 hours, and took an Uber home. It was awesome. My parents had the kids for the weekend, so I was like, oh, this is great.
Have you seen the baby since?
I stopped and saw the baby a couple weeks afterwards, and the birth mom sends me pics every few months, and it's not my baby, and I really want her experience to be their experience. I want them to say whatever they want to the baby. But at the same time, I understand that I've had a hard time explaining to my children how they became about. So I think that's part of my desire to start writing children's books, talking about different ways that families are made, is thinking about how she's going to explain to her baby how her baby was made.
Still ahead on WTMJ Conversations.
I couldn't find anything to like start introducing the concept to my babies of different ways that families are made. So I did it myself.
Entrepreneur and author Lisa Praber talks about her book, Mama Cow.
Now more of WTMJ Conversations.
And I'm Libby Collins. Our guest today is Lisa Praber, an entrepreneur and the author of Mama Cow. And this comes to your book, Mama Cow.
Mama Cow.
Tell me about Mama Cow. And I think now we've got an idea as to why you wrote the book. But what questions were your kids raising that you really said, yeah, it's time?
Well, I don't think there was necessarily questions that they were raising. It was more me really struggling to start to introduce it early without using shop talk. I didn't want to use sperm. I didn't want to use the word donor. You know, I didn't want to use the word surrogate. Like, there were so many complex medical terms and jargon that made it hard for me to, like, imagine how I would start introducing this topic. No board books at all. You know, anybody who had written a book on this subject.
A board book, you mean the thick books,
yep,
that are
thick
easy
pages
for little kids.
With babies. Yep. Yeah. So anything that was out there was, like, self-published, and Amazon doesn't self-publish board books, and nobody does board books. So I couldn't find anything to like start introducing the concept to my babies of different ways that families are made in a way that's simple and uses farm animals or, you know, something that was just baby friendly. So I did it myself. A friend of mine and I were at a Brewer game, and I told her I wanted to write a children's book explaining the way my family was made, and she wanted to write a book about how being a girl in construction. And so we both helped each other write these books drunk at a Brewer game. And that was years ago. And my sales and marketing company, The Middle Six, my team kept pushing because they knew how much this concept meant to me that they wanted to take on this project and publish the book. So last year we embarked on a self-publishing journey to make Mama Cow reality. And it was probably the hardest project myself and my team have ever done because it's not easy at all. And we did a bang up job, I think. We had an amazing illustrator, and the book turned out so wonderful.
What's the story?
So the story is Mama Cow is in a field with a bunch of cows, and they're all about to match up by brand. They all have brands on their hips, stars and diamonds and hearts, and they're all about to match up in the field and head off into the sunset to make a calf. And there's a farmer, her name is Kate, and she's facilitating this process, and then the poor mama cow didn't have a match, so she was really sad. So the farmer recommends some bulls that would like to help that are on a, you know, a piece of paper, and she picks the one with the matching brand, and then she heads to the sunset to make her calf, and then 9 months later she comes back with her matching heart brand baby. And it's a rhyming book, so it's very cute, but that's the story that's told.
What's been the reaction when you've sat down with your own children or other children and they've looked at the book, they've read the book?
All kids love it, except the first time I read it to Clayton, he said, "This is boring." But all the other kids like it, so that's good. It is a cute story, and the kids love the cows. And my intention is really to continue growing this brand with additional stories telling different ways that families are made. So the next book is already written, and it's about surrogacy. I'd like to do one about adoption. I'd like to do one about fostering, same-sex couples, traditional couples, just introducing this concept of how babies are made to kids.
You have had a unique experience compared to most women. You had two children that you've never met the father. You chose to be a surrogate for people that you knew. Would you ever do any of this again?
Oh, yeah. 1,000 times over. I'm already talking to a family about surrogating again. I love being pregnant, and I'm so grateful that my body is strong and able to do this, and I hope to do it 1,000,000 times over. I'm kind of old.
Wait, a million? Hold on.
Well,
a million?
Okay, I'm a little old, so maybe this will be my last one, but I would certainly like to surrogate at least one more time.
Lisa Praber. The book is Mama Cow, and I'm sure there's going to be more books in that line.
Yes, hopefully.
Thanks for joining us. We've been talking with entrepreneur and the author of Mama Cow, Lisa Praber. If you want to find out more about Lisa, there's a link right here on our website at WTMJ.com. And you'll also find a partial transcript courtesy of eCourt Reporters. For WTMJ Conversations, I'm Libby Collins.